following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics as we get into the summer months. A little bit calmer of a feel, more relaxing, kind of like we're just sitting on a back porch having a barbecue. We might do that one time. Do one of these Inside Eagle Nations live from a barbecue. I guess it'd have to be a lunch barbecue, but nobody says it has to be dinner.
That's interesting.
Yeah?
I never thought about that.
I hadn't either until... Well, right now. It's amazing what happens when you just kind of start talking.
Well, now that we have our extra camera device here, we could incorporate more people. We could figure out a way to get some of our friends on if we could get Zoom into this. That might be past what we can figure out, but there's all kinds of things that can swirl here.
There are definitely changes that are going to be coming up. Got some new equipment over the last couple of weeks, so it's not going to be just Danny and I sitting here behind white walls, but we will get there in the next couple of weeks. Later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, we'll catch up with Deputy Athletic Director Chris Davis, talk about his first year, coming up on his one-year anniversary. June 15th, I think. Wow. He said, was when his one-year anniversary officially will be. But
how'd you get him to sit still for the entire thing?
Who says I did?
That's a very good point.
As long as the mic has a long cord, he can go wherever he wants to.
That's a good point.
But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Just a couple of news notes to get to over the past week in Georgia Southern Athletics. Georgia Southern men's soccer and Jack Phillip earns COSIDA Academic All-District. For Georgia Southern baseball, last week you had Mason McWhorter named first-team All-American by Collegiate Baseball. Nick Jones was named second-team All-American. That's probably not the last awards that are going to be coming out. Later on this week, you're going to have the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association announcing their All-Americans in the Dick Houser Award Trophy. Both Nick Jones and Mason McWhorter were semifinalists for the Dick Houser Award Trophy. Both of them still on the ballot for the All-American as well. Those will be coming out in the next day or so. So some hardware still rolling in for Georgia Southern baseball after their run to the championship game, especially for Mason McWhorter and Nick Jones.
We told people all season long they were going to be All-Americans. This isn't a surprise. But I would hope that they find themselves on every available All-American team. Haven't had an All-American here since Victor Roach hit 30 home runs in 2011. That's big, big stuff.
We talked about what the Major League Baseball draft looks like, and Aaron Soka brought up a really good point this morning that I hadn't thought of yet. So the Major League draft is July 11th, 12th, and 13th this year.
Yep.
It's 20 rounds. Aaron pointed out, that's the first couple of days of my honeymoon. Getting married on July 10th, and then the next day is the first day of the draft.
Huh.
So we're going to
– well.
We're going to see how this goes. Good thing it's a road trip and you just throw the old conference call on. And
I can't say it for sure, but I would think that both Mason and Nick would have a chance to get selected.
Yeah, I would think so. There's a couple of dark horses for Georgia Southern baseball that you may see slide into the late rounds because I think this year you're going to see a lot of – college seniors taken more so than the last couple of years because when it's only 20 rounds, yeah, and especially since you only had a 5-round draft the previous year, you're going to have picks that you know are signable. And so you've got to have, especially when the first two, three, maybe even four rounds are the guys that maybe you're on the fence of signing, those high school seniors, those guys coming out of junior college or juniors in college as well. Those are the guys that you're going to have to take early and pay a little bit more than you normally would, and you're going to have to use the back 10 rounds of the draft for guys that may be undrafted free agents in years past, but being able to do that in the last 10 rounds of this one.
Yeah, this is part of the product of the COVID year with so many guys coming back, and usually if you're a draft-eligible senior, that means that you don't have any kind of leverage in the draft. That's why some of those guys go seemingly high top 10 rounds. Teams will look to save money with lower slotted bonuses so they can take that extra money and use it for the top picks. But I would think, I agree with you, I think this year that seniors, they're going to be selected more, and I would think that they're going to be able to get some more money. And I think especially for somebody like a Nick Jones, who's 6'6 from the left, different arm slot, can touch 94 with his fastball, and whoever gets him, they'll experiment with that breaking ball. And even for Mason, I know it's a funky batting stance, but when you find a way to hit 18 home runs and bat over 370, there's something to it, whether it's with an aluminum bat or how he's going to make the transition to wood. I think that there's something there.
And I think that's part of what makes Mason so marketable for major league clubs. And you talk about the fancy stance, and it's not what people kind of look for when you're going out and scouting, but it's something that knocks it down. But the fact that he's not just your home run or strikeout guy, the fact that he can go the other way with power with an aluminum bat, it'll translate to wood, because the power the other way was both homers and doubles to the gap. A double to the gap is the same whether it's aluminum or wood. Same thing.
There is something that he does when that bat is way back here. There is something that he did this year to go from here to here quickly, more so quickly than maybe anybody else in the league. He generated some bat speed. He told me earlier this year that his hands were a huge reason why he made the jump that he did. He's always been a high strikeout guy. He's admitted that. That's just part of who he is. And we know that somebody like a Noah Ledford is probably going to be a high strikeout guy. High volume swing, big risk, big reward. They're going to hit a lot of home runs. But Mace was able to increase his bat speed by changing what he did with his hands. He was able to get to the ball more quickly, get that barrel head out. And, I mean, you saw the results of it, getting a chance to come back for this past year and give us one of the best seasons we've seen in a while.
And the fact that he was hitting 400 less than a month to go in the season.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. You don't see that in the college game anymore. You don't. Or any game, to be completely honest.
Ever since they went drop 3 10 years ago, you're not going to back your way into the aluminum bat hits. And, you know, ERAs have come down. Averages have come down. But you're seeing the separation between guys who would put up gaudy numbers and guys that can still do that now that you don't have bats that can give you a bunt home run, I guess is a way that I can put it. If you can still find that sweet spot on the barrel the way that Mason did so many times this year, that's the way that you can attract attention from professional clubs. And we know that he probably garnered a little bit of attention last year, driving in 23 runs in 16 games. That led the Sun Belt this year, being able to do it over a full season. I wish that he would have ended at 400 because he was so close, had that little taper off towards the middle portion of May. But he was just so close to getting there.
Talking about baseball, the NCAA regionals wrapping up, or getting close to wrapping up, supposed to wrap up yesterday, but still have one regional going on, Old Dominion and Virginia. It's the Old Dominion regional. They are the one seed, but South Carolina ended up hosting because of some kind of logistical nightmare between that, and I'm not going to even try to get into that. But when you look at the other super regionals that are set, you've got Arkansas taking on NC State, Texas hosting South Florida. That was a really good regional down in Gainesville. South Alabama made a run, forced it to the if necessary game, but fell to South Florida yesterday afternoon after they knocked off Florida and obliterated Florida with 10 two-out hits, two-out RBI hits, mind you. It's one of the craziest things we had seen, and Charlie Nichols and JT Crabtree just said, I stopped trying to figure out what was going on. But South Florida will take on Texas. Mississippi State will host Notre Dame, Stanford and Texas Tech, Ole Miss and Arizona. Dallas Baptist will play the winner of Old Dominion and Virginia. Right now it's a 3-2. Old Dominion just took the lead in the eighth inning. But Vanderbilt will host East Carolina. That's going to be a really good regional.
Oh, that is a fantastic super.
That's going to be an incredible super.
Oh, I didn't realize that they were played each other.
Oh, yeah. And Georgia Tech gave Vandy a run for their money.
It took an
11th inning home run by Vandy in the if necessary game. But that's one Wiley Ballard was pretty fired up about.
So that's must watch.
Vandy and ECU. That'll get going later on this week. LSU will go to Tennessee rather after they took on the Eugene Regional, Knoxville. It was Tennessee knocking off Wright State, Duke, and Liberty. As that is what your super regionals kind of look like. And so you've got two teams that we've talked about it a lot of what the schedule for Georgia Southern. You got two teams that are going to super regionals that Georgia Southern saw six times in the first seven games of this year.
Maybe could have won at least three, maybe four of those games.
Yeah.
And that was before you knew what this team was going to be. We were still thinking, okay, last year was what it was. Could that translate that quickly? You had Tennessee 2 of 3, ended up getting swept. Had a chance to get 2 of 3 from East Carolina, ultimately taking that middle game. But we were not crazy when we said, look, those are two top 10 teams, those are host teams, and now they're super regional teams.
One of those hosting a super regional, mind you, as Tennessee again will host LSU. They were the number 3 national seed, which, big LSU fan this week. But hopefully ECU can knock off Vanderbilt. That I'm telling you, that's going to be – I know Vanderbilt is the high and mighty Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
But ECU is a team – that I'm telling you, they're going to give Vanderbilt some problems.
You feel bad that one of those two isn't going to have a chance to go to Omaha.
Oh, for sure.
It stinks that they have to match up against each other, but with what ECU has done with its rotation, we saw Gavin Williams here as a reliever when he was throwing 99. Now he's, I think, 93, 94 as a starter. Carson Wisenhunt, we saw his coming out party with those 11 strikeouts over 6 2/3 in the series finale. Connor Norby, I think, leads the country in hits. I want to say he's right there with Mason in total bases. I don't want to say for sure, but an All-American, he's been north of 400 all season. He might be the best player that Georgia Southern saw this year.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that Connor Norby was the best player that the Eagles saw this year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it's very rare that we see somebody the second week of the season and you follow them throughout the season. And, of course, it's easy when you're looking up stuff for Mason McWhorter. He's right up there with Connor Norby, and so you see what he's doing. But he is somebody that, one, plays the game the right way,
yeah,
and plays it really pretty well.
I think we've been quietly pulling for ECU.
Oh, for sure.
And we knew that they were going to be one of the best teams in the American. We knew that they were going to go to a regional, hopefully have a chance to go to a super. Does it seem like a roadblock going to Vandy? Sure, with Rocker and Leiter waiting. But I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised if East Carolina goes.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I think if East Carolina is able to do something in game one, I think they might push Vandy off the cliff.
Yeah, trying to get the last two out there would be very difficult.
Especially game two probably being Jack Leiter, who everybody talks about Kamar Rocker, and yes, he's fantastic. He's got the gaudy numbers. But I'm still telling you, I think Jack Leiter is the guy that if you have to have somebody on the mound in a must-win, you've got the choice between the two. You got to go Leiter, right?
He's had the better year.
Yeah. He has been, at times, untouchable.
Well, just don't talk to Georgia because they did go out there and take 2 of 3 from when Vandy was number one, but that was right after they lost to Georgia Southern in that midweek game in Athens.
Yeah, and I don't see their logo on this bracket.
No, they did not make it, unfortunately.
But we will keep our eyes tuned to Vandy, ECU, Tennessee, and LSU, with those being two teams that Georgia Southern saw this year.
We got to give a little bit of a shout to South Alabama. Look, we know that there's not a whole lot of love lost between the two teams, but watching them make the kind of run that they did, as well as Montiel, Sandel, Wilson, as well as they pitched, Miles Smith is insane to do what he did against Florida.
His arm is not real.
I was pretty proud to watch them represent the league like they did.
Yeah, no doubt. And especially considering that that was the only representation that the Sun Belt had in the NCAA tournament, they did it well. And if you haven't already, go and find JT Crabtree on social media. I think it's JT Crabtree _USA something to that nature.
It won't take you long.
No, it won't take you long. Go and watch the highlight videos that he posts of his calls from the booth. It's got him and then Charlie Nichols, their SID, who is one of my favorite people in this league. He sits right next to him, and you just feel Charlie hanging on every pitch. It's incredible. My favorite part of those videos is watching Charlie.
Especially the one they just put up of Ethan Wilson's home run robbery yesterday, which watching it live, I never saw the ball. And then I realized he caught it. Never saw the ball in the video.
Yeah. Unreal. But we will move on to the Super Regionals. Again, the Old Dominion-Virginia game that's in the bottom of the eighth inning up in Columbia, South Carolina. That series has been pelted by weather the last couple of days. But Old Dominion leading 3-2 over Virginia in the bottom of the eighth inning. The winner of that game will face Dallas Baptist. That Super Regional will still be in Columbia. Yeah. So even though South Carolina doesn't play in the regional final in Columbia or doesn't play in the Super Regional in Columbia, they still host it.
The disadvantage of a COVID-influenced Super Regional setup.
We were talking about it before we went on for the podcast. I kind of like the neutral site for the Supers. I know for a regional you can't find that many sites to have a full week of your own baseball.
Yeah.
But for a Super, you have 3 or 4 days. I wouldn't be surprised, especially if minor league baseball stays the way it is this year, where you have throughout minor league baseball, you play Tuesday through Sunday, you play the same opponent in the same place, and then you have Monday off.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised to see minor league baseball have a couple of stadiums that they know are not going to be, their home team is not going to be there for that week, and you play neutral sites in those stadiums.
And once you get to the Super, I think the idea of home field advantage, I don't know if that exists anymore because you've got two very similar teams that fought to get where they are. You might lose a little bit of the atmosphere. I'm thinking, okay, a Super in Duty Noble for Mississippi State is probably going to be a little bit different than if you would have it where the Biloxi Shuckers would play. But at the same time, if you've got big enough fan bases that will travel, you can get some of the atmosphere. I do like the idea of a neutral field, just like we saw in Montgomery with the conference tournament. I think that should be the setup. I don't believe the conference tournament should be at somebody's home field, even though it was awesome here 4 years ago. But I think from a standpoint of making it level for as everyone as possible, the neutral site is the best way to go, and especially in a Super where you're not saying, okay, this team is this much better than this team. You're there. Let's go down the middle, and let's see who's best over the next couple days.
One final news note on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. A couple of game times for Georgia Southern football have been announced over the last couple of days and weeks. But just to get you caught up on what we know game times look like for Georgia Southern football this year, week one against Gardner-Webb, that'll be the 4th of September. That'll be a 6 o'clock kickoff inside Allen E. Paulson Stadium. A 3:30 kickoff on week two as Georgia Southern heads down to Boca Raton to play Florida Atlantic, that on the 11th of September, a 3:30 kickoff there.
We'll have to fly to that one, right?
Yeah, I think so. We might have to get our passports renewed.
Well, that's also true. We'll check with Mr. Harbin on that one.
Yes. Head out to Arkansas. That one we will have to fly to.
Yeah, we are not driving to Arkansas because Fayetteville is in the northwestern portion.
Yeah.
Jonesboro's here. I don't kind of know this backwards, but Fayetteville is way over here. So we're almost going to Colorado. We're going to Fayetteville.
Going out to see the Sooners. Going to see Arkansas in week three on the 18th of September. That'll be on the SEC Network
at
4
already.
O'clock.
We saw Oklahoma already.
We already did. Been there, done that. At South Alabama, again, that a Thursday night game in week seven on the 14th of October in ESPNU broadcast at 7:30. And then the end of the regular season on the 27th of November up in Appalachian State, which I'm sure will be a balmy 12 degrees, a 2:30 kickoff for that one as we stand right now. But I wouldn't be surprised if later on in the season, if the seasons go the way that Georgia Southern and App State hope, that one might be for the Sun Belt Eastern Division title. And that one might get picked up if the seasons go the way that everybody thinks and hopes they will.
And we will go ahead and tell everybody now that there will be a tailgate snowball fight between Frank, Russ, and Terry that day.
I don't get to play?
You're too valuable.
That's assuming I'm not going to win.
I don't want you tumbling down the mountain.
Yeah, you don't want this tumbling. No, not good for anybody.
Who do you think would win a snowball fight with us five?
Oh, goodness.
Maybe that could be our U pick.
Soka says Frank.
I'm kind of leaning that way, too.
Yeah, but I think Russ could be the dark horse. Because I think Russ could have some tricks up his sleeve that nobody was expecting.
What, like Buddy the Elf? Just be able to make snowballs like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. That'd be a good battle. Might actually have to do that in Facebook Live it. We have had a snowball fight before.
Up in Boone.
Up in Boone. When I think it may have been our...
It was the year before I got here.
Yeah, the last year that Chris Blair was here,
yep.
He and I, Rachel was there with women's basketball. AJ was still the contact for men's basketball. And a snowy Boone and nothing to do on a Thursday night. What do? Leads to a snowball fight and AJ tumbling down the hill.
I wish I could have seen that.
There's probably a lot of people that do. It was pretty entertaining, I can tell you that much. Something else that's entertaining, the deputy athletic director for Georgia Southern and Chris Davis. Catch up with him earlier on in the last couple of days to talk about his first year, his first athletic calendar year as the deputy AD for Georgia Southern. And we talk to Chris Davis now.
So we continue this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We welcome in a special guest and the deputy athletic director and Chris Davis. Chris, appreciate you joining us.
Good to see you, Colin. How's everything going?
It's rolling, and it's been a crazy year. Since the last time we talked, you've got to experience what Georgia Southern is all about on game days and a lot of different sports. And we talked about it last time, how you were excited to see what a game day looked like at Georgia Southern. Now that you've had a full athletic calendar year to kind of look at it and see what everything is about in Eagle Nation, what's the biggest thing that surprised you?
I don't think it was a surprise other than it affirmed exactly what you heard about what Eagle Nation was about, is just the passion, the excitement, the overall response that people have when you say GATA or Hail Southern or Go Eagles, all those different terminologies. You can tell not only excite Eagle Nation, but also is what makes Eagle Nation special. So I think that's probably been the most fun part. Naturally, I didn't get a chance. You know, you said I got a chance to see the athletic season. I think all of us in the 2021 athletic season will always remember how different it was. And I think, as you see with all the different announcements coming, you know, as long as we sit here today, we're all excited about what 21-22 athletic season holds, with maybe some return to what we would say normalcy looks like.
With everything that this athletic department had to go through in the 2020-2021 athletic year, when you look back, what are you most proud of what Georgia Southern Athletics was able to do?
I think, first of all, you know, our main focus was the student athlete, you know, so how could we keep the student athlete being able to do what they want to do, which was be a student and be an athlete? And I think here at Georgia Southern, our university was committed to, you know, being open from a student standpoint. And I think you look at what we did from an athletic standpoint, you know, and you use all the sports as a barometer, and we played all of our seasons. And I think not only did we play all of our seasons, but we played them as in an environment where we were able to get some fans in, which was great, to provide an atmosphere, but also do it in our way, on our way that we are able to meet the safety protocols. And then when you think about it, and I've said this to some people, is that 13 games, you know, for football, and just looking at that, especially with what we did or did not know back in August, and then as you went through the season, September, October, etc. I thought that was probably one of our a cool moment, was to be able to get that in more for our student athletes, to be able to put them in an experience and then travel down to get a bowl game. And you just look at all of our sports and what they were able to figure out, you know, whether they were on a playing surface, in a court, or on a court, excuse me, or outside, you know. And then you saw the culmination of towards the end of our athletic year, with three sports getting some conference championships. Is really, really cool.
The last time we talked, we kind of asked you what the plan was to attack the COVID-19 year for athletics, and I'm sure a lot of that changed as we went throughout the year, having to keep your head on a swivel. What's some of the things, and obviously people know some of the football games that had to be switched and everything that went into that, but what are some of the things that behind the scenes that people didn't see that kind of threw you curveballs throughout the year?
Oh, man. Terminology. There was so many different pieces of terminology. Understanding what was contact tracing, what wasn't contact tracing, how we were supposed to do it. Our medical team, from an athletic standpoint, university, and them working together with our CARES team, they did a phenomenal job. That's why, you know, when the NCAA put that deal out during March Madness about we could send four people to the – you know, to the Final Four, and we chose our medical team that were part of it, is because there was a lot of hours worked outside of the normal role that you have and responsibility to kind of navigate this COVID situation that we were all facing. You know, between that and then, you know, the interesting part too was the amount of conversations that were being had about traveling. That was probably what people don't realize, was all the what-if scenarios that we had to have at every turn. We had more what-if scenarios, but I think that goes to the overall mantra of being prepared. And I think if you look at it, we were trying to always be prepared and do it in a way where if there was a situation that, you know, that happened, we were ready to kind of respond and not respond with our heels, but respond with, okay, we've thought about this. This is how we're going to act.
All right. You brought up the cardboard cutouts that were at the Final Four. Got to bring up a cardboard cutout that was at Hanner Fieldhouse and at JI. There's a cardboard cutout of you, and I didn't know it at the time, but you didn't know it was going up. What's the story behind your cardboard cutout?
Well, first of all, I did not select the picture. I did not know it was going to happen. I believe there's still an investigation going on of who's actually been responsible, because that was, you know, the good thing is that revenue went towards, you know, our athletics foundation. So I'm really excited that whoever was the person that initiated that cutout, that I'm really happy that they made an impact to our athletics foundation through acquiring that cutout. I still don't know how they acquired the photo, so I think there's an accomplice with the investigation. I also do believe that now that it's traveling, that there's multiple people involved. I did find out from our good friend from the Georgia Army National Guard, Sergeant Friedel, that he now has it in protected inside a Humvee that we're apparently riding together. So, yeah, I don't know how it happened, but it looks like his cutout and my cutout right now have become BFF.
When you kind of look back on you personally getting your first year here at Georgia Southern, I think we talked about it before we started recording that June 15th is your 1 year anniversary of being here at Georgia Southern. For you personally being the deputy athletic director here at Georgia Southern, what's this past year kind of been like for you?
You know, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's been a blessing because it's been a great experience. And I think, and that's with all the unknown walking into what we did not know. And even if you look at it from a standpoint of all those different things that you could look at, and not necessarily from a negative, that's all the stuff you had to deal with. You could be like, man, that's not really what the job's supposed to be, because, you know, there's all this terminology you had to learn about XYZ as it relates to COVID. But I actually feel blessed because multiple reasons. Number one, and this is in no particular order, Eagle Nation has been awesome. And I think, you know, people make the place and the traditions that are here and everything that corresponds with making this place special from a fan standpoint, fans care. And with that being said, when Eagle Nation cares the way they do and they're passionate, it makes it fun that, you know, that there's people out there that are going to experience what I think is the most important part of this whole thing, which is that these 18 to 22 year olds are having a really cool student athlete experience, not just from the student side of things, but from the athlete side of things as well, so that they're able to kind of have a 360 degree around them. The community of Statesboro and the surrounding area called Bullitt County has been unbelievable. My wife, Randy, and our kids, Colton Harper, have acclimated extremely well, even during all this. And they have, I think, you know, there's no issues with friends. The people here are awesome. They've been really, you know, I'm not ever typically too worried about myself because with my job and everything, I kind of get focused in on things. But Randy and the kids have been just unbelievably well taken care of with people. And I feel indebted to the community because that says a lot. And then as it relates to the coaches and the staff here at Georgia Southern, you know, we've pushed the envelope. You know, while everybody, I think, was worried about COVID, which we were, hence, look what we were able to accomplish. It wasn't like we were also on the grind with trying to, you know, not let anything defeat us from a business standpoint and try to look at all the opportunities that we could, you know, to push forward from the overall ecosystem of Georgia Southern Athletics, so that when we're ready to continue to be faced with what 21-22 looks like, we're in a position to continue to grow. And with the Eagle Club tours coming back and the 17 different stops and the athletics foundations and the different things that we did with the athletics foundation, and they're doing, that team over there is doing a fantastic job with not only touch points, but, you know, renaming, you know, to the Eric Russell Foundation, all the different things, the different society levels that we put in place, just all those different things. I think that's what I'm excited about, is that we could have sat back and said, man, there's a lot of adversity out there. And I think we actually took the opportunity to know that adversity is there. But the same token, how are we going to continue to build our character so that Eagle Nation can be proud and our student athletes are put in a position where they feel really excited about being here at Georgia Southern?
That's one of the unique things about this staff. And we've talked about it with Jared, how everybody's families are involved too. You mentioned your wife Randy and your kids getting ingrained in Eagle Nation and Bullitt County, but it seems like everybody around the athletic staff have gotten their family involved with Georgia Southern Athletics. Why is that such a big part of what you guys are trying to do?
Well, I think, and I feel really, you know, I appreciate the question, honestly, because it kind of hits home to the heart as it relates to that. In this, if you look at it, like, college athletics to me can be a lifestyle. And yes, you can sit here, you know, because there's people that I've gotten to know in the community, like, man, I feel like you're always at work. But I hear you. And I, but if you make your family as part of the environment, because it is, I mean, it's a cool environment. I mean, people, you come to a game because you're not only you care, but you also want to be entertained. That's the beauty of sport, no matter what it is. And so you get a chance that, yes, you're at work because you're over there, you've worked so hard to get it to that point, and you want to support the main mission of this whole enterprise, student athletes. So you're there for those two reasons. And oh, by the way, you're there also to hang out with Eagle Nation and your season ticket holders, your donors, your fans, your corporate partners, etc. And then you have your family there. I mean, it starts to check a lot of boxes. And so to me, like I always say, and this is something that, you know, Jared and myself and our senior team have talked about, like with each position that we look at, we want to make sure that it's a great fit people wise, because we can get the skill set, but can you get the right people? And because if you get the right people, that's really the magic in the deal. You know, a lot of times you can sit here and talk about, you know, culture and all these buzzwords, but until you have people, you can't develop all the other stuff. And, you know, we're striving every day to try to make not this team, not just a team, but a high performing team. So how do you do that? And I think it starts with people.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, looking in the past of what 2020 had to offer, you mentioned the New Orleans Bowl game for Georgia Southern football. Being the sport admin, I know one of the things that you got really excited about was being able to help design the New Orleans Bowl ring and be able to present that to this football team. Take us kind of behind the curtain of what that process looks like of designing the ring, looking at the ring, figuring out what this is going to be, and how many people have a hand in it.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, each situation is different as it relates to that. You know, Coach Lunsford really wanted to come up with a ring that was special moment, you know, for those seniors, because of everything they did for this program. And also, you know, naturally it was a unique year. I mean, everyone's going to always look at that 2020 season and kind of think of certain things will always go through their head. And so, you know, we have a great donor who is who was involved with the ring, who owns Herb Jones and locally here, and does a great job with the creation and kind of bringing the imagery to life. And Coach Lunsford had some ideas, and you know, I thought the trophy was really unique, and it's a great trophy, and it's heavy. It's, if you get a chance, it's pretty heavy. So, but the trophy was unique to it, and so and then how could you tie in something Georgia Southern on the top of the ring? You know, the mantra GATA is fantastic, and it means so much to so many, and it's extremely unique. So being able to put that on the ring, I think was neat. Tying in, we talk about tradition. I mean, there's a yellow school bus on the side of the ring. How cool is that, right? And I think that speaks to the volume of what 2020 looks like. And then I think showing that ring from a bowl game on the side with the bowl logo, you know, it turned out to be a cool ring. I know you saw if you saw any of those social media videos, that our creative team put together, you know, you saw all of the guys' faces. And I think if anything in today's world, those rings should signify, yes, a victory, but also you want them, because listen, those rings are pretty big. You're not wearing those every day, right? So should bring back the memories. And I think the positive and the negative memories, because negative memories hopefully will teach you, you know, just as many things as the positive memories. And also, you know, the fact of what that team meant to each individual, whether you're a student athlete on that team, whether you're a coach on that team, whether you're a support staff on that team, whatever hand you held and you were part of it, I think that's the cool part.
As we kind of put 2020, 2021 behind us and look ahead to what 21-22 has in store for Georgia Southern Athletics, we saw at the tail end of the last athletic calendar year, Georgia Southern Baseball had the last series here at J.I. Clements. That was full capacity. Everything is kind of pointing in the direction of full capacity for football going forward. How much does that excite you and this staff of being able to have a quote-unquote normal game day back at Paulson?
I mean, I'm extremely excited. I'm fired up. I mean, I started it's exciting because I haven't really seen, I mean, it's not I haven't, I have not seen one. And we have not seen one, a lot of us, that, you know, from different people that started in the time when we haven't played a normal athletic season, quote unquote. I think just the overall excitement of seeing the environment, not only inside Paulson, but outside of Paulson. And also just everything that comes with it. But not only just for football, I'm talking across the board. The fact of seeing, you know, now you're starting to see what soccer looks like with full capacity, just being able to see kind of the setups. And then I'm, you know, just... people, you know that I also like all sports, so I like to kind of see everything, and therefore seeing what it looks like, you know, from inside of Hanner with all of our programs that compete inside Hanner, you know, volleyball, men's and women's basketball, to outside as well. I'm excited for just the overall deal. I'm excited for our fan base, and then I'm excited mostly too for our student athletes, because I think that's one of the best parts about being an athlete and competing is watching or getting a chance to compete in front of people. I mean, you know, it's it makes it all worth the, because the practices should always be harder than the games, because the game should be a reward for how hard you practice. That's how I've always kind of viewed things. And so I think it's exciting when you're practicing hard and you're playing your game, and not only are you playing your game that you love with your teammates that you love and your coaches you respect, but you're playing it in front of your fans that care so much about this logo. It's awesome.
You talk about all the excitement around Georgia Southern Athletics, and a big part of that are some of the facilities projects that we've talked to Jared a couple of times. He mentioned it last week on East Georgia's Morning Show, the indoor practice facility and the Convocation Center. What does that kind of look like going forward for Georgia Southern?
I mean, we are on the absolute move on both projects. They're both in different phases of the their deal. Got a chance to, well, I'm working on both of them with a group of people that are extremely talented folks. So we're excited. I mean, the Convocation Center is going to be a game changer. It's going to be a game changer for the university, for the city of Statesboro and Bullitt County, and then I think it's going to be also a game changer, naturally, for our student athletes, coaches, and staff. So, really excited about that. It's going to be we're in still kind of the planning phases of what everything goes in and how it all operates, and then hopefully by early part of next year, shovels are going in the ground, and it's going to be more than a shovel with building arena, but you get my point. And then on the IPF, that's a fun project, to see it from its conceptual phase to watching, so many people get after it as it relates to raising money from it, and then everyone working hard on what it could look like. So we're, right now we're in the next piece of the equation and to get that project off the ground. And so that's exciting. And, USG's been, extremely helpful with just providing their feedback. And then with that also being just talking with all of our steering committees and our senior folks in the Athletics Foundation have been great. So it's been fun. It's going to be huge. It's going to be impactful. It's going to be transformative. You'll hear that word a lot when those two projects come together, because it is going to be transformative. I mean, it's a impactful word, but I think it should be used with that, because you think about the amount of those projects we'll have in our system of Georgia Southern. It's super cool.
Finally, before I let you go, I'm going to put you on the hot seat for a minute. What does the next athletic calendar year, what are some of the goals that you kind of have for both you and this athletic department moving forward?
Well, I think, first of all, this athletic department should continue and is going to continue having this we mentality. If you start to look at it, and you start to look at when you're all pulling together and you're communicating in a way, and this is going to sound super buzzy, but you're communicating in a way where, people care more about how the overall situation that they're dealing with impacts the overall brand of Georgia Southern Athletics. You start to do that on a granular basis every day, and then you start to think about where people are applying their thoughts to as it relates to what they're trying to do to impact Georgia Southern from a standpoint of whether it's from our academics folks with graduating our student athletes, or helping them with their GPA, or helping them with their class, or trying to help them facilitate our APEX program that we got lifted off the ground this year to be able to surround the student athlete outside of sport, outside the academic side, and around life side, and everything that program takes on. Then you think about how our compliance department is always working on our coaching staff with worrying about trying to figure out, making sure we're staying in check with each other, but also how with our recruiting initiatives, et cetera, that are now happening. And you start to take each area and where we are from a strength and conditioning, nutritionist, the wellness of a student athlete, the overall mental wellness, and you start to look at that piece. Then you start to look at, from our business office standpoint, where we are financially, how are we being, the key word for that is resource optimization, right? Like, are we truly using our resources, both not only from the revenue coming in, but also the revenue going out? And we're doing that in a way that is not just thoughtful for that individual business unit inside the athletic department, but it makes sense for the overall athletics department as a whole. If you start to think about all that, and you notice that you start to break down where there's no silos and everyone's cross-pollinating each other, and when somebody doesn't understand what's going on, they have the curious mind to know the why, you start to all of a sudden create this atmosphere of really high-performing. That all of a sudden starts to what we're seeing is, look at how, we have, women's tennis, rifle, men's golf, you had baseball make a run to championship. You start to see all of a sudden, like, everyone's bar wants to raise. And then you see when, women's tennis pulls in after winning a championship, and it's 9:30 or 10:30. I don't even remember what time at night. I just know it was nighttime. And you have all these people from the athletic department around and student athletes, which I think was ultra special, come out to that parking lot in front of the parish building to welcome them back, that's when you know, like, it's being lived. And when you can get away from all the buzzwords and you watch it being lived, you know you're starting. Like, it's the it's coming, or it's there, and it now it can continue to evolve. And so I think that's what most excites me, is the whole year and how it's been culminating. And then you think of what you have coming up upon us. That's exciting. So that's what I think. It's not about what's exciting for Chris. It's more like what's excited for this whole entire athletics department, because I know you asked like what I'm excited about. I think it's more from a we thing about like what we're excited about as a whole and what we talk about daily around here. Because if you continue to talk about it daily, it starts to create an accountability measure. And when you have an accountability measure in place, people always intuitively work towards that. And so that's where I'm thinking.
Chris, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics.
Well, thank you, Colin. And, you know, I know what you do is very important, because you're over there carrying our message, and it's extremely important. And taking the time to hang out with guys like me, I mean, are you kidding me? But no, it's been super fun. I'm looking forward to year two. But more importantly, just feel blessed to be a part of Eagle Nation. And thanks for everything you do. GATA, Hail Southern.
We will always take the time to sit down with Chris Davis. Appreciate him stopping by and being able to be a part of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Got to catch up with him again. His one-year anniversary coming up on June the 15th. Hard to believe he's been here a year. It's crazy to think. You go back to what the athletic calendar year started with this past year, and having Georgia Southern against Campbell, that feels like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's also hard to believe that it's coming up on a year that Chris Davis has been here. It's just over a year that Jared Benko has been here. Having so many new faces into Eagle Nation within the last year to 18 months, it seems like they've only been here a little while, but it also, in a different way, seems like they've been here for years.
And you've had a group of people in the upper portion of the athletic department that have committed themselves to a place in the middle of a pandemic to try to change the place for the better. They're uprooting their lives in the middle of not being able to live life.
Yep.
And I like the way that Chris put that, with the women's tennis celebration, with men's golf, with people going out to the airport, with people being over at the Parish Building after winning Sunbelt Conference Championships. You're seeing that there is a buy-in. You're seeing that there is a trust factor that had to exist from upper staff that can permeate the rest of the athletic department, where if something good happens for baseball, you know that track and field appreciates it. If something good happens for basketball, football is going to be right at the front of the line to appreciate that. Ultimately, I think that while team championships are going to be great for Georgia Southern more than the major sports, and we just saw that within the last 2 months, but you are going to see Georgia Southern make more of a run at the Bubas Cup, which is the all-sports championship trophy. South Alabama's had a hold on that for a number of years. They just won it again, I think, for the 15th time. But that's where Georgia Southern is trying to ascend to. We know that football was going to be vital. We know that basketball is going to be vital. Baseball was going to be vital. But every other sport pulling in that same direction, grabbing that rope, and all trying to get to the ultimate goals. Now, the indoor practice facility and the Convocation Center, those are game changers.
Yeah.
It's going to dramatically change the outlook. It's going to alter the presence. And it is going to take Georgia Southern to a place where you think back to what Irk Russell said 40 years ago. You ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
That's part of this continuing to grow, continuing to expand. This is the ain't seen nothing yet that people – I mean, the Convocation Center is something that's been talked about for about 10 years now. There have been rumors and back channels and people thinking that it was coming, and we love Hanner. We know we're always going to have Hanner. But this could take Georgia Southern to the next generation. The indoor practice facility is one that's come up within the last few years. And seeing some of the mocks and seeing how it's going to be utilized, you've seen other teams around the Sun Belt that have had major renovations, major facilities projects. This is one of the biggest facilities projects maybe since the construction of Paulson Stadium.
Yeah.
And it may even trump that as we see exactly what it's all going to be used for. But to have those two potentially being done at the same time, this is going to be a much different place within the next 3 to 5 years. And it's a story that we're going to be able to tell.
The thing that I really liked that he talked about, and it was one of the big things that I wanted to get out of him in this interview, was the fact of everybody that has come on to Eagle Nation in the last, again, 12 to 18 months has really gotten their families ingrained into Eagle Nation. I think of Eric Reasoner, the sport admin for baseball and the director of the Athletic Foundation. His wife, Anna, was a big part of helping Kim Hennen put on the Day at the Diamond that baseball had a couple of weeks ago.
That's right.
She was a big part of being able to have that event, period, and being able to put it on. And so when the wives, the families, the everybody in that family becomes a part of Eagle Nation, it really strengthens where, yes, Chris Davis is a great asset to Georgia Southern, but the Davis family is a great asset to Eagle Nation. Same with Jared Benko. His wife Sarah and their children have been a part of Eagle Nation for, again, a little over a year now. But being able to have all the families be a part of Eagle Nation just makes it so much stronger.
They're not just pictures in a program. They're not pictures on a website. I mean, they're people that are dramatically trying to change for the better, trying to uphold the proud traditions that have been built here for many, many years. But there's a lot more to these people than just those people. That's why they are the way that they are, and that's why they felt so empowered to come here to improve that tradition, but at the same time, they can help make their own memories.
And it just adds to the people that were already here that had their families ingrained in Eagle Nation. Kim Hennen is one of the more recognizable faces at J.I. Clement Stadium for all that she's done for this program. You think of Coach Lunsford over at football. What's the next thing you think of? Probably Tippy is one of the top things on the list of being able to be a part of Georgia Southern football and all that she's done for that program. So having the families is a huge part of being successful for Eagle Nation.
It's their 19th anniversary today.
Happy anniversary.
That's
perfect.
That's
you wrap
nice.
It all together.
It's a pretty nice tie-in. And the cutouts of them especially, right in front of Paulson Stadium, right up front at Hander Fieldhouse. I mean, the bleachers were pushed back, but as close as you could get them to the floor. And then at baseball, been here all season long. The presence that they have built, the impact that they have had, and it's the trust in this place that's only going to get better.
I did think it was funny when Sergeant Friedel put on social media this past week that he and Chris Davis were taking a ride in the Humvee. They were moving it out of J.I. Clements. They put it back over to the Military Arts Building. He and Chris Davis are – I haven't driven by to see if he left them in the window or where those went to, but that'd be – that should be a photo op. Everybody just comes by and takes a picture with the Georgia Southern Humvee, and there's Chris Davis and Sergeant Friedel.
I want to fire the cannon.
You do?
Yeah. I'm not going to be able to unless
I was about to say, you're kind of busy during that time, but
– I have to tell Terry to take a couple of
snaps. You need a really long rope.
I just think that'd be really cool to be able to shoot the cannon off.
We should get Russ to do it. I think Russ would have a lot of fun with that.
Him and Frank are the two that would make the most sense because they're already down there.
Oh, Frank would have to have it on a live broadcast on WJCL.
Look, Bob, fired a cannon.
We move on to this week's You Pick segment, as it is coming from our buddy over in Charleston, South Carolina, as I pull it up real fast. Favorite sports memory you have seen in person, not Southern related? Again, this coming from our buddy Andy in Charleston.
Favorite sports memory, non-Georgia Southern related?
That's what he said.
Phew.
Hey, while you think of that, Glenn Ingram had a pretty cool idea.
Okay.
When a player scores a touchdown, let them fire the cannon.
Depends on which player.
It also depends on which end of the field they're going towards.
That would be awesome, though. They're going down towards
the FOC.
Everybody goes all the way back down. it's like the NFL did with the big camera thing in the end zone on turnovers, where the entire defense would sprint down. And That'd be kind of cool to see brought about all the way back up the other end and be there for whoever fired off the cannon.
Look like P.J. Fleck trying to go down the field.
Do you have one?
Do I have one?
Favorite non-Georgia Southern memory?
Yes. And I think this qualifies, because it's not a Georgia Southern memory. I happen to be there because of Georgia Southern.
See, favorite means that it's got to be the one. There's a lot that are going around, but what's yours? I need to think about this for a minute.
Mine is, and we've talked about this plenty of times on the podcast, of 2020, opening day for baseball, Georgia Southern women's basketball was in Louisiana,
yeah,
okay. And being able to be there whenever they had the pregame ceremonies, remembering Tony Robichaux, being able to be a part of that, be up in the booth with Jay Walker, Brad Topham, Josh Bruner, and we got to know Robe again through Josh and Jay and Top, but being able to be there with them and see that ceremony, see the 5,000 strong singing center field and put me in, coach, in the seventh inning, that was pretty special, and that's something that I will never forget.
All right, the one that I'm thinking of, it would still tie in with Southern, but I'll say the one that I'm thinking of that's non-Southern, would going to Army this year.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire experience, but especially hearing the national anthem played on the harmonica.
Yeah. Was a World War II veteran. Was 93, 94 years old.
And that was – I don't think you heard a sound. You didn't even hear clothes rustling for somebody moving.
Yeah.
During – that was just – I don't even know how to tell you what it felt like, but just to hear it. And I want to feel like we cranked up the crowd mic.
Oh, for sure.
Because we definitely played it that day. And they did such a good job that day with the Fort Stewart insignia on the back of the helmets. And Army did just such a phenomenal job. Now, the flight didn't go the way it should have. But the –
Chris Davis was a big part of that too.
Yes. Thank you, Jim Harbaugh, kind of.
We might still be in Newark if Chris Davis wasn't there.
But hearing the anthem on the harmonica was about as – It made you feel something you hadn't. Just because you see stuff like that on television, you see features like that all the time, but to be there and to actually soak that in and think, oh, now we got to go play a football game. But that whole experience was awesome. The one that I do think of in terms of a game, the 2013 SoCon tournament in Greenville, this was my second year with the Citadel, and the Bulldogs, that's probably been their best season since the 2010 championship season. Walked off in game one against App State, played an amazing second game against Western Carolina. At that time, Alan Beck was the hitting coach for the Catamounts, and him and I still talk about this game. Citadel ended up winning 13-12, back and forth game, crazy, crazy game. And that was my favorite baseball game up until the two that we saw in 17 here in that tournament. And the one that we just had against the Cajuns down in Montgomery, that is going to be competing to be on that list as well. But they had to play App State again to get out of the bracket. They needed to beat the Citadel twice that day. There was one out in the ninth inning. App had two guys on, so the tying guy was at the plate. It was a 6-3 game. Dylan Dobson, who was their freshman standout that year, hit a line shot to right center. Houston Armstrong was playing center for the Citadel that day, and Houston's about 5'7", 135 pounds, strong as could be, but you would probably miss him if he was sitting in this room. That's how small he is. But guy who has the heart of a lion, would do anything you could ask him to do. He had an amazing season offensively that year. He made one of the best catches I've ever seen, and maybe the couple that Baldwin made in 16/17 would trump them. But he made the catch, diving, sprawling out in right center, doubled off Michael Pearson for App at first, and I remember Calvin Orth was playing first for the Citadel, took the ball from center field, just stomped on the bag. The celebration ended up in center field. Nobody came in to celebrate near the pitcher's mound because the catch happened out there. The Citadel bullpen, everybody in the dugout, all raced out, and that's where they had their celebration in deep center field. I don't know that I've seen that before, but ended up playing Elon the next day in the championship and lost to the Phoenix. Always a reason to not like Elon, but we like Taylor a lot. We like Taylor Durham a lot, but that was one where you felt like your heart was just beating out of your chest the whole time.
I think I was sitting in the back of your booth that day.
Yeah, you and Chambers and Draper were in the back of the booth. Lee Glaze and I were calling the game, and I said, well, we got to get out of here because you were playing Elon next.
Yeah.
You were the first of the two against Elon. I said, we got to get out of here. Georgia Southern's got to get in here. Hopefully we can give them some of the luck. But and then just going down, I think I had to walk around the ballpark a little bit just to – because you don't expect that kind of play to end that game. That ended App season. And at the same time, it sent the Citadel to the championship game. It was pretty unreal.
That's our You Pick this week again. Appreciate our buddy Andy over in Charleston sending that one in. Our favorite non-Southern sports memory.
I think he might have been there that day, too.
Probably. Hawaiian shirt, NCAA cap, all of it.
Maybe. You know how he is.
But we will do it again next week, next Tuesday. Episode number 134 will come your way here on Facebook Live and all across your podcast platforms. Before the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.